It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Thunderstruck here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day here on Liberty News Radio Network here from Phoenix, Arizona, in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Today, something hit my radar screen. I'm like, oh, yeah, baby, we knew this was coming. We would have on, when I was producing for Charles Goyette's show, we had Jim Rogers on every week. And I remember it was 2004, and he, or early 2005, and I remember him saying something. He said, Freddie and Fannie's done. It's over. They stopped doing their quarterly reports. You watch. Here it goes. Here it goes. Here it goes, man. They're just dumping it all in there, and it's just going to get all toxic, and how long can they hold it out? And sure enough, here we go. So this is something that we've been watching for a long time. And when I need some, if somebody explain this to me, Fannie and Freddie is on its way. It looks like it's going to be delisted from the New York Stock Exchange. Now, this is where it's been the collection of all things yucky, all of the bad, all of it just getting dumped into that. And we'll get into details of that and so on. But this is a big sign. And who knows more than anybody else, but the guys have been writing about it over Bob Prechter's Elliott Wave International in Gainesville, Georgia. Peter Kendall is online with me. He's co-editor of the Elliott Wave Financial Forecast. And in fact, did a book, The Mania Chronicles, that talked about a lot of this stuff. And one thing, I went to do some research on it. The Mania Chronicles, you can get it at Amazon in hardback for only $119. I'm like, dang. Pete, I got you there?
Yeah, you got me.
Pete, $119. Damn, I guess somebody wants that book.
Well, it's a big book. It's 700 pages long, and it documents the period from 1995 through 2008 when we had what we call a series of mania experiences, most importantly the tech craze in 2000, but then the housing situation that peaked in 2005, finance in 2007, and then the initial culmination was 2008. But we have a long way to run. The bust phase is going to be somewhat commensurate with the period of rise of 95 through 2007. So it's got far to go, and Freddie and Fannie fit right in because, we talk about it, we actually concluded with a series of charts showing Freddie and Fannie and the progression from really early 2000 when we said Fannie will get the worst of the downturn. I'm sorry, it was more like 2002. And that at that time, it was about $90. So now we see it's at a buck. And yet, still, there's much more to go because there's a delusional process that has to be worked out. These stocks were essentially valueless, yet they were still listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And today we see a new phase beginning.
Well, this is, you know, we'll get into the understanding of that. I want to make sure that we get into this, that people understand what's going on here. You know, Freddie and Fannie, they were traded as, they were like made up 20% of the total market volume. It was enormous what they represented in the market. And then you have FHFA, which I had to look up, who the heck are they? That is the Federal Housing Finance Agency. And let me read you their mission statement, what they say. They're the Federal Housing Finance Agency, because they love us, okay? Mission statement. Provide effective supervision, regulation, and housing mission oversight of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and the federal home loan banks to promote their safety and soundness, support housing finance and affordable housing, and support a stable and liquid mortgage market. How are they doing on their mission statement?
I think they've got some problems, wouldn't you say?
That's almost like a comedic line there. I mean, you know, provide effective supervision, regulation, housing, mission oversight of. I'm going, you know, this is when they stop filing their reports or quarterly reports. That's like a neon flashing light right there. So I'm going, okay. So, you know, we knew something like this was coming. Tell me what it means, though. I mean, we have a Freddie and Fannie. What they had done is they were, let's see, how we go. How about the decision based on the requirement to not trade companies which are so bankrupt, not even the U.S. government wants them on its balance sheet? And as we have reported previously, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York is perfectly okay with even taking bankrupt stocks as collateral in the discount window. Now, what they're saying is we got these government agencies back, kind of semi, we pinky swear we might, you know, back you up, Freddie and Fannie. And the Federal Reserve is issuing money on stock and assets that they know to be worthless. I mean, is that still going on?
Well, I think that it absolutely is. The U.S. government is still using these entities to lend to home buyers. If it wasn't for their presence, the housing market, and some people suggest that the housing market would completely dry up. I'm not sure if that's the case, but that's the fundamental story. Is certainly it's true that without the presence of Fannie Freddie and now the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, which is doing a lot of the lending through various other governmental entities, that you still have this fundamental government intrusion in what would otherwise be a private process.
Yeah, a free market of, like, home. I give you an example. My son and daughter-in-law, they're pregnant with their second child. They're in their early 20s, and they're hitting it hard for a house. My wife is a real estate agent, and looking for them, and we've been counseling them over the last year, rent. Don't buy. Well, it's cheaper to buy. Our monthly payment would be $300 less. I'm going, it doesn't matter if all of a sudden you lose another $20,000, $30,000 in equity a year after you bought it. So they looking at houses, and the houses that were, you know, $250,000, $300,000 were being listed at $110,000, $120,000. Then those same houses they were willing to pay $110,000, $120,000 a year ago are now, they just made a final offer on one for $85,000. I mean, this was $250,000, $300,000 for an $85,000 home that now the bank came back with a counter of 89. They did 85. They said 89. They go, nope, 85. And the bank, I told them, I said, see if this rings true. I go, I don't think they're going to be doing anything until after they can get a close in July so they can get into the next fiscal year. I think the reason none of these are turning right now is because they don't want to have all of their stuff marked to market and they'll be bankrupt again.
Right. I think that the other part of it that you can look at is just the psychological phenomenon of Fannie and Freddie and, what we're seeing right now is just still part of the process. The fact that these entities were still listed securities on the New York Stock Exchange suggests that there was still a belief that they somehow would at least return some value to them to shareholders. And so there were people in the marketplace that felt that they could again become shareholder-held entities, even though it was hard to understand how that could be when they were obviously bankrupt, and there was seemed to be no real possibility of that. The thing that took place today was that they were finally delisted, meaning the government was sort of recognizing the possibility, the likelihood that they were never going to be publicly held or have any real value to the shareholders. Now, if we go back, you mentioned the statistic, which was back in September when these two entities, as well as several other what we call zombie financial enterprises, actually comprised 20, 30, some really high percentage of the volume on the New York Stock Exchange. That showed you that there was still a belief in what we call the mania era. That's why we recognize it in the Mania Chronicles And this process still has a long way to play out. As long as people were willing to buy these stocks, it represented and trade in them. It showed us that the psychology of that rise. We knew in 2002, and Jim Rogers was on in 2004, and they weren't telling us what their financial shape was. We all knew, or if you were a thinking person, you could see that there was a fundamental breach there. But we had to play out the whole process. It just didn't happen overnight. It wasn't until 2007 that Stanley left the $70 level. So we're just starting to work our way through it.
Okay, this is when we come back, you know, and we got Pete Kendall from ElliottWave.com going to help us understand. Because I can read what people say about and everything, but that doesn't mean that we really understand. I need to understand, one, what gave it its value, or at least, you know, what they said gave it its value, and what its value really is and why. We'll find out when we come back on Declare Your Independence.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
Oh! The man be coming around, and yeah, we're not all going to be treated the same. I can guarantee you that. And this, you know, just 18 minutes ago, Wall Street Journal comes out, and who are they quoting? Oh, yeah, they get, you know, Philip Swagel, he's former Treasury Assistant Secretary for Economic Policy during the Bush administration, and he says this is a positive step. It signals that these guys are going to come out of conservatorship in a different form, and that the existing shareholders aren't going to get anything. Hey, yay! Okay, so I want to understand, go back to the beginning of this, of what we have. Pete Kendall from ElliottWave.com and wrote the book, literally. And if you want the book, it's a comprehensive book. It's $119 on Amazon. But, you know, if you want to understand, or you can just listen to this show. And Pete, yeah, help me understand, what gave Freddie and Fannie value to begin with? How did that start to diminish, and why? What was it that would made them a valuable stock to have at $70 a share to begin with?
Well, it's a long story. We don't have time to go into all of it, but what gave it the value, what created these entities, was a long bull market in stocks. Really, what we look at even behind stocks, to a long bull market in social mood. A rise in the general social well-being and the attitudes of people about their well-being. This goes. If you've had Bob Prechter on before, he may have gone back and explained that this bull market goes back 200 years. When the republic was founded, the fundamental basis for the growth was all very sound. Now, what happens is you get into the late stages of a bull market from that period in the 1700s, but also from 1932 forward. And as you get into the later part of the bull market, you get this thing called the ultimate crowd, what we call government. And government got behind homeowners after decades of in which homeowners were more than willing and capable of paying their own way for their houses, not even with debt at some points when the bull market was healthiest. As we got into the 50s and 60s, we started to extend credit, and we got what were called government-sponsored enterprises. These are Fannie, Freddie, that pushed homeownership into the depths of the population. And what we said, we said that they will be extremely vulnerable when the trend turns down. So that's simply what's happening now. We had a bull market that went further than we thought, a mania really that rippled through into the real estate market and allowed values to remain aloft even after the market turned the market continued to go up, even as it went up further and further. Finally, Fannie just kind of leveled off at about $90 in 2002 and didn't go up with it. So you could see it was weakening. That's what Jim Rogers was referring to 2004 when they stopped providing transparency with their financials.
Well, they wanted to, as it started to flatten off and everything, that, you know, we had the dot-com bust happen, so we get Greenspan going, oh, man, we can, especially after 9/11 and so on, gave them a good excuse, and they're going, you know, we can just keep, you know, blowing up this bubble. You know, we got to have a, you know, a forever bull market. We just turned the right dials. What were the dials that they turned? How did they make it worse?
They accentuated there's another bubble I didn't mention. That's the debt bubble. That underlies all the others. The debt bubble reached a peak in July of 2007. Once they were unable to, and the government found all kinds of ways to contribute to that. And one of the most visible is Fannie and Freddie, because they are publicly traded entities. We can see transparently what their value is, and that's what we love to monitor, is simply the stock price. And what we got was a continual cascading lower beginning in 2007. I wouldn't disagree with the government when they say this is a good thing. The reason it's good is that it's giving us transparency into where we are in the cycle. We are still nowhere near the bottom. We're at a point where the zombie financials are starting to be shut down, and that's a part of the process that must take place, and that we welcome as a point in time when we can see where we are.
I'm with you,
next
brother.
Phase down, which is critical for your listeners to know about.
No, let it go. It should have never got propped up to begin with. That was the problem, you know. But the one thing that they're talking about here is that, you know, the company's shares will now be traded in the over-the-counter market, where they will be quoted on the over-the-counter bulletin board, typically the domain of untested companies and more speculative stocks. They will still file disclosures with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Pinky swear, maybe they'll do it this time. Now, what's going to happen is because they're delisted on the New York Stock Exchange, I mean, are they valueless? Are they negative value? I mean, they certainly are. You know, banks are going to, you know, start folding even faster and more now. The FDIC is out of money. They're going to be, you know, screaming for more government, give me money, because we got to, you know, take care of all these banks. They're not foreclosing or taking over banks, you know, right now, because they just can't afford it. So now we're going to have these traded on the over-the-counter market, and it's going to start at, I don't know what, $0, $1 or something. And if they're going to be on over-the-counter, I bet you there are people right now that are sitting there waiting for this to happen, and they know something we don't, more than we do, and they're going to make gazillions of dollars on something. I mean, what do you anticipate is going to happen?
Well, when you talk about Freddie and Fannie, you have to understand that together they lost almost $100 billion in 2009. And even in the first quarter of 2010, when the economy had supposedly turned around, they lost another $18.2 billion. So when you ask me what do these people own, they don't own. If you own a share in Fannie or Freddie, the only thing you own, because the government is on the hook for that, and will. And if there's any, if there ever happened to be any residual value, it would go to the U.S. government, not to the shareholders. Who there's bondholders that would also be effectively would stand in front of these shareholders. So there's no effective value to these people. All they are, I think the only thing they were anticipating was that there would be an upward blip in the perception of prospects for Fannie and Freddie, and on that basis they could make money. In other words, they were hoping to find a greater fool to sell these shares to. They look at that, it's still a inborn, deep-seated desire to speculate. And
yeah,
as long as that's in the market, we have further to go down.
Well, you know, because of this announcement this morning, you know, Fannie dropped another 40% to 56 cents a share. Well, is that high? I mean, why does it have any value? Just because they think it does?
Right. It's when I say a mania, what I'm talking about is people that buy things not because thing share has an underlying value, but because they believe they can sell to someone at a higher price. And what I'm saying is, at $56.50 on the OTC market, that the reason it declined 40% today is some traders say, okay, well, I don't have a liquid market to work with anymore. I'm going to be on the OTC market. I'm not going to be able to find buyers as easily. And I've been had. There is a recognition there. And that's actually a sign that we're about to head lower, because we're in a particular phase in the cycle when reality starts to set in. And people start to see where they are in the cycle, and in this case, they bailed out of Fannie and Freddie, which it was kind of a miraculous thing that they hadn't recognized that the hopelessness of those situations and those shares earlier. Going to an OTC, really, to answer your question, is it's going to make it much harder to trade those shares.
Well, Pete, can you stay another segment?
Sure.
Now, let's go ahead and keep you over, because there's so many more questions I have on this. And so okay. We got kind of a bead on it, you know, for the audience that, you know, we got a thing that was a government thing that they said had some value. It didn't have value. Now what are we going to do with it? And who's left holding the bag? I you know, where'd all the money go? Well, I don't know. We're going to find out with Pete Kendall from Elliott Way when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I want to break free. I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies.
Yeah, we just want to break free from your lies. Oh, man, here on Declare Your Independence, we got a very special guest, Pete Kendall from ElliottWave.com, that understands the mania. I mean, a lot of it behind, it's tulips. I mean, you know, we're selling tulip bulbs, and men are, they're a whole bunch of money until you start to find out they're just tulip bulbs. And, you know, Freddie and Fannie had tulip bulbs, and that's just what it is. Since their federal takeover, Fannie and Freddie have functioned as tools of the administration's strategy to keep mortgage credit flowing and help homeowners avoid foreclosures, from the Wall Street Journal today, just a little bit ago. The Treasury's preferred stock agreements with Freddie and Fannie effectively guarantee the company's debt. The two mortgage giants have struggled mightily since the housing bust. In May, Fannie requested another $8.5 billion from the government, and Freddie said it needs $10.6 billion injection from the Treasury. So people, that these stocks, are they going to have a perceived value on the willingness of the government to keep giving them money?
I don't think so. I think that this is part of how they go away. Those stocks are I don't see any basis for them to regenerate their value.
Well, why would they keep giving them money? I mean, let me put it this way. Here we have, this is how I was looking, just talking around the water cooler. It goes something like this. It's like, we have mortgages on homes in existence sitting out down the street here, okay? It's a Freddie Fannie's, you know, eventually kind of got it sitting there, and you go, okay, it has any value? Why is it? Is it zero? I mean, why is it zero? And why would they? I need to understand here. You know, if they just said, no, we're done, they close it, well, who takes the asset? Is it Obama now has a bunch of government-owned homes, and now they're just going to start giving them away to welfare recipients? I mean, what's going to happen?
Well, we're talking about government here, and as I explained before, we've been in a long bull market, and government's role at the end of the bull market is to try and support whatever its values have been driven higher by the market, but then also by government itself. And then at the top, we're in a bear market, and what happens in a bear market is there's a desire, a hope that accompanies the decline process. Government is perhaps one of the great manifestations of that process. They're always trying to pump the bubble back up. That's what their role is. So what they're doing is, as things deflate, they're trying to find every possible way, and they have many tricks in their bag, very well developed as far as the housing industry goes, and they're going to use everything that they possibly can to continue to try and prop up prices. That's what they do. That's their role in the scheme of things. They're always behind the curve. You asked before what happens once the bubble pops, and the answer is it's like a balloon. When it pops, it just goes into thin air, and government can't really deal with that reality. They can't just throw their hands up and step back and say, we're going to let this thing fall and then step in and possibly. I mean, it would make more sense if you felt like your role was to help things to grow and get stronger, the logical thing to do would be to let them find their own level and then begin to contribute. Because if you're logical about this, and government isn't, but it's a psychological response. But if you were, you'd try to step in and go, well, let's contribute to housing once it's hit bottom. But they're just going to fight it all the way. That's what it does.
Okay, so let me understand this. I have a home that, let's say I have a mortgage, and it is backed by Freddie, Fannie, somewhere, somehow. Who owns it?
Actually, it's probably owned by your neighbor. I mean, what they did was they securitized it. Another product of financial engineering, which is what another aspect of the bull market. We found all kinds of ways to, quote-unquote, spread risk, which means the bank didn't take that paper. It was backed by a guarantee from Freddie and Fannie and then sold to your neighbor. And so he may well hold your paper or a stream of income off of it, and he's hoping you'll pay. You may be able to, but your other neighbor, he can't, and so that is just a loss to the system, to your neighbor, to Fannie and Freddie, and to the economy as a whole.
See, we tried to dissect this before. We've gone through it. Even people that had home, we just here at Freedom's Phoenix, we went and walked it through, and I'll give you an example. We have a gentleman, he goes, okay, I have four homes, and he went through three of them, had what they called mortgage-backed security kind of, you know, thing, does all these derivatives and so on, but they had it, the electronic mortgage system, people have it, and it doesn't even really belong to anybody. They did mortgage-backed securities where they split it to where you don't really have a home that has a deed that's recorded at the county recorder's office, and I have a contract that I pay this much mortgage, and it goes to this bank, and if I don't pay, then they can foreclose on it, and so on. It kind of got chopped up in such a way to where, like you say, they get access to the revenue stream, but they don't really have a right to foreclose on the house itself. And I'm going, well, how the heck did that happen? Well, because they can, okay? So they did this, and it's got to unwind somehow. And what I'm looking at is I'm going, okay, if you have Freddie and Fannie has some value, it's represented by something. Is it a mortgage, or is it just a mortgage-backed security derivative? Is there, what do they have?
They have a pyramid of financial paper that is created over the course of three decades that is now subject to the forces of what we call deflation, debt repudiation, and reduction. That's what is taking place. All these forms of financial engineering, you're almost getting into the area of derivatives, which is also, we can show step by step how over the course of a bull market you just created a increasingly complex financial and scheme that is now as the bubble air that helped create that and drove these financial instruments and also spread them out into weaker and weaker hands. As the air comes out of that, they have to pyramid is being reduced and deflation is taking hold. So there's really nothing that Fannie or Freddie or the government can do about it. It's just they have to try to find ways to. If they were smart, they would try to find ways to accommodate the decline.
Yeah, just let it go. Start at zero. If they want to, like you're saying, if they want to help something, well, let's find out what the real value is, and then they can worry about it then. But I need to know, how are we even going to find out what the real value is? Let's say there is a home. I'm looking at it right now. I'm sitting there. It's across the street there. I'm looking at a house, de la, somebody owns whatever. And we, as this deflation starts to go down, you know, just the story about my son and daughter-in-law trying to buy a home, I'm going, look, even if you get it at a third of what it was 2 years ago, that's not going to stop it from going down another, you know, 20%, 30%, 40%. You know,
right.
So I'm, you know, how do we know what the real value of a home sitting there is? I'll tell you what it's worth. It's worth what somebody will pay for it.
Yeah. And I was going to say that's what it's worth. It's worth what your son and daughter-in-law will pay for it.
So when they go and they don't have any Freddie and Fannie go away. There's no backing from the federal government guarantee anything, as if it wasn't really guaranteed anyway. You know, there's always kind of this implied that we might, you know, kind of cover it. But now it's all the implied that they can cover it is what some lobbyists can get some congressmen to pass is what it is. So sooner or later, you're going to have to look at a home and you're going to say, this has some value to somebody, not the derivative on it, not the paper that was sold 15 years ago, not the financial instrument that they created, not all this, you know, shuffling the paper back and forth and around. And the banks have been taking this worthless paper, and this is their toxic asset thing, and they're getting the Federal Reserve or the government or Treasury or something to bail out the banks by taking this. And then they're sitting there holding these pieces of paper that mean nothing, but sooner or later, they're going to get down. All that's going to get wiped off, and we're trillions of dollars, and you know, sucks to be y'all. And we just indebted the next generation all this money that you owe somebody that they because they said. And you know, these young kids are like, "Hey, man, it's not my debt. I didn't do it." So we have a home sitting there that somebody's going to get on their balance sheet, the actual home, the mortgage, or the deed, or the something. How is that going to happen? Who's going to get it?
Well, I think what you're asking me to describe is what is the bottom going to look like? As far as, you know, as an individual house, I can't say, you know, what paper trail is going to allow for it to suddenly be, I mean, some of these paper trails are so indecipherable that you can't buy them if you wanted to. I think that's part of what you're saying.
Yeah, then, no, I mean, they don't really, the value, it got so far away from the house that it was just pretend money paper on the house was used as an excuse to create a piece of paper they kept trading up. You know, it's the mortgage-backed security is not even the mortgage. It's just backed. It's just pretend. It's not the house. And I'm just wondering, you know, when we get back, if you can hold on a little bit more, I just want to get there. There's going to be a bottom here, and we don't know what it's going to look like. Why? I mean, how bad is it? We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
It's more than just a feeling. But, you know, it gets down to just fundamentals. But I'll tell you, you know, Pete Kendall from ElliottWave.com, that's exactly what he's been telling us. You know, a lot of it is, it's a feeling. And that's where you go to Elliott Wave. It's kind of unfair to you, Pete, by me asking all these technical questions and everything, because I know that you and Robert Prechter over at Elliott Wave, you didn't see value of anything of what they were doing anyway. You were just, that was the whole point you were making. You're going, look, it's just all in your head.
You know? Yeah.
So that's kind of the point. You're going, you want me to give you a value on something when I already knew from the beginning that the value was just whatever, you know, they made you think it was. And that was really the whole point. So tell me about how you look at this stuff and why at a fundamental level, Elliott Wave, you guys predict this kind of stuff and we're so accurate. Give me what makes you so smart.
Really, we think we have a grasp on the psychology of the market, and we use a technical tool that's drawn out of the stock market, but we think describes the psychology that drives stocks, and then beyond that, looking deeper, you know, we think we can go into we notice the similar traits within real estate market, and then beyond that into society as a whole, and you know, so we think we have a model that works, and it's based on psychology.
You know, the Elliott Wave, and I'll help you out, we spent a lot of time with Robert on this before. Elliott Wave is an actual wave that you can recognize in all organic systems, you know, be it, you know, the weather, human beings, human nature being represented in 6 billion minds trading on a stock market that produces a number that you can track. And the mood is that it goes up a certain way and it goes down a certain way. And if you can recognize this pattern, you can sit there and rationalize it all the ways you want, but the bottom line is there's a pattern to life. And they're going, we're going to apply it to the stock market. And what do you want us to apply it to? Okay, let's apply it to Freddie and Fannie. Well, let me tell you what's going to happen. And it happened. And you can't get around from the fact that, you know, Elliott Wave, they go, yep, it's going to happen. It happened. And, you know, why it happened is it's really generated around just our perception. And I asked Robert before on this, I'm going, well, does it take into account the corruption and the manipulation and the bailouts? And he goes, yep, it's all part of it.
In that case, in this case, it would be scandals that tend to surface as you get into the high. People tend to financial pyramids. Bernie Madoff as an example, and then you turn down, then they get even more desperate. And as we were talking before, and I was listening to your voice, it kind of reminded me about sort of like the stages of grief. The first, I can't remember all the stages, but denial I know is one. And then as we were sort of grasping for, well, where does it end? Where does it go? And the last stage being acceptance. I think that's what we need, what we would need to see in the real estate market, and where, as far as where is it going, is a much higher level of acceptance that prices are down, and in fact they may go lower. Instead, we still think people see, well, they've leveled off. They're about to go back up. The housing market's finally turning. Instead of man, this is rough, and I don't think they're going to come back.
I tell you, when the acceptance happens, I guarantee it. The acceptance will not happen until after November elections. They're going to hold this off as long as they can. And then, I'm surprised it's been held off as long as it has been. And during the 2008 presidential election cycle, there was talk of, after the election, I don't think they're going to be able to hold it until then. And sure enough, they didn't. They had the bailouts all came right before the elections. And I'm going, this is sooner or later, you can talk, mood is going to be created by fundamentals. Sooner or later, the fundamentals come to pass. I mean, that is, and then of course that creates its own part of the mood cycle that you guys articulate. So so we're anywhere near the bottom, you think? You look at your graph. What are you thinking? We're going how much further down? Or are we going down?
Or the stocks? Actually, I think we want to look at the stocks, because I think you'll probably get a bottom in the stock market, at least coincident with real estate. So let's look at that. I think what you would see is much higher cash levels for individuals and mutual funds, for instance. Even as early as April, the average mutual fund had 3.5% of their money in cash. And what happens at a low is double-digit percentages in cash. So we were nowhere near, at least at that point, and I'm sure we haven't had enough time for that to evolve significantly from that level. So before we hit the bottom, mutual funds should be fearful, therefore have high levels of cash.
Well, one of the other things that we're looking at is precious metals. And I know Bob thinks, we haven't, we're still looking at depreciation in precious metals also, don't you think?
Yeah, we haven't gotten into it, but Fannie and Freddie are also a big part of what we call a deflationary period. That is that debt is repudiated, and that's obviously not good for Fannie and Freddie, and that's a big part of what's at working against them. Reduction in people's pay, their incomes are down, they can't pay back the money they owe from their house, the default. This cycle is still in the really formative stages. So that's a whole other can of worms that we didn't get into, but it certainly is important and is manifesting itself in this issue.
Well, it's, because we don't have time to go into precious metals and so on. But, you guys are predicting a deflation across the board on just about everything.
Yeah, right. Silver and gold, even gold, which is generally considered a safe haven, we feel that it will be affected by the deflation as well. Well, people need cash, and they're going to have to, they're going to have to sell their gold. It'll be against their better judgment, because they recognize that there's a lot of fear. They'll sell their gold to make their payments and to have money for their necessities.
Wow. You look at history, I mean, because that's what you guys do. You're tracking, you know, trends that's been going back to forever. And you're looking at what? The greatest depression? I mean, you know,
the model. A great point. If you kind of want to figure out, well, what's happening with real estate, you just look back at the 1930s, and that's a good model for just about anything. If you look at that, you can kind of get a pretty good idea about what will happen in real estate, as well as just about anything.
Wow. So, I mean, what is it? You got chickens in your backyard? I mean, wow. You think I'm kidding, man? We pushed that all we got. I'm here in Central Phoenix, and I got 6 chickens in my backyard making eggs, man. You know, we're doing square foot gardening.
Well, that's good. That's excellent. Now, that's actually, I don't want to get into it, but that is one difference. This is actually a larger degree decline than that of the 1930s. And so, and that's one difference. In the 1930s, at least people were more agricultural. They had some of the necessities that we may lack in a paper environment.
Well, I'll tell you what the necessity is, freaking knowing how to plant a seed. I mean, you know, so, you know, as much as I advocate, you know, I'm like, you know, I get silver, you know, because I'm just too stupid to be able to get anything else, and I just, you know, anticipate it's going to be worth something. And my thing is that I right after I buy enough food goes underneath my bed and a bunch of seeds in case I need them and, you know, some garden implements. And so, I mean, this is basically is going to be, can I keep breathing in and out? If I can survive this. Now, you're looking at your trends, how long do you, if they ever allow it to go to the bottom, which it's eventually going to go anyway, I mean, that's just, you know, regardless, how long of a recovery does it, I mean, does it start to spike back up? You know, are we, you know?
We'll get some violent reversals like we had from March of last year to April of this year. But we think they'll be retraced completely. So as far as the next bottom, I think, you know, maybe by the end of the year, and then you get a rally. But then into probably the next decent bottom will be a couple years off, and then you'll get a big rally off of that. And then we think we have further troubles. Whether we go back to the lows that we established in 2012 is a bit of an open question, but I think likely. And then after that, into the middle of the next decade, we'll finally get something that'll really be a good opportunity to invest over the long term.
Now, wait a minute. In the middle of the next decade, you talking in the teens or the 20s?
Yeah, 2015, something, 16, something like that.
Okay, so what we're looking at now is we need to have 5 years of food. Is that what you're telling me?
No. I don't think you need to have 5 years of food. I think you do need to prepare yourself in various ways, have cash. We're gonna have a functioning society. It's just that the bear market will be intensifying.
You know, Pete, thanks for, you know, trying to make the mud a little bit clearer, man.
Okay, you're welcome. I hope I didn't muddy it up anymore.
Well, no, I mean, this is really the best way to look at it. That's when I call Elliott Wave, is they're going, look, man, you know, it doesn't, you know, details, it's all coming down to perception of giving value to stuff that doesn't have any value, and sooner or later, that goes away. And then what?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And that's where this is exactly what you guys predicted. It happened, you win. Or we lose, whatever, man. You know, and if you want to know,
nobody has to lose. You just have to recognize the trend and position yourself for it.
Yep. You look at the top of freedomsphoenix.com, and you'll see the ad for Conquer the Crash. That's from these guys. You want to know how to conquer the crash? Get the book. Thanks for Pete Kendall from ElliottWave.com coming on. We'll have you on again soon. We'll be right back for the next hour here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.